Hello, podcasters, and welcome again to this series of podcasts in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Decade of Centenaries. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these bite-sized podcasts, we take a look at different aspects of Kilkenny's War of Independence story. Today, I thought we might rummage through some newspapers from 1920 to try and discover what our grandparents or great-grandparents would have been talking about. Now, some of the stories were related to the ongoing War of Independence effort, but many were not. It highlights that even in these times of conflict, normal life must and does go on. The first story that caught my eye was in relation to mobile phones. Believe it or not, the British forces in Ireland started using wireless telephones, as they were called, as a result of the Irish Volunteers, or IRA, cutting telegraph communication. Here's an extract from an article that appeared in the Kilkenny People in April 1920. The government authorities, owing to the frequency with which telephone and telegraph wires are cut in Ireland, have decided to make an extensive use of the wireless telephone there and thus establish a means of communication which cannot be interfered with by wire snippers. Portable wireless telephone instruments have a radius of about 30 miles and can be carried almost in one's pocket. When using them, the operator who wishes to speak calls up the man next to him by pressing a key. This rings a bell on the next phone. The man equipped with it puts the receiver to his ear and conversation proceeds much as it would between two people using the familiar fixed instruments. The portable instruments, though effective for short distances, only need but a small battery to work them. They should prove quite satisfactory for transmitting messages from one police station to another or between adjacent towns. Another story that jumped off the page was a tragic and heartbreaking case. It involved the death of a baby in Tullerone, with the death of the child described as infanticide, a terrible word that I wish didn't need to exist. It has come as a huge surprise to me when looking through newspapers of the late 19th century Ireland and right up until 1920 how often this occurred throughout the country. It was usually the massive stigma of having a baby outside of wedlock, as it was referred to, which drove mothers to abandon or take the life of their child. I know this is a very difficult topic, but I feel it is extremely important to remember the mothers and babies who suffered, and we can only imagine what was going through their minds. There was very little education, if any, into matters of reproduction 100 years ago, but human nature being what it is, will always find a way. A number of cases like this appeared in Kilkenny courts every year, but I just took this one example from February 1920. A young-looking girl from Rahilty, Tullerone, who was arrested in connection with the death of a female child, the body of which was found in a pond on the lands of Abraham Ryan, Rahilty, was charged on Wednesday with infanticide at a special court before Mr. P.D. Sullivan, registered magistrate. Sergeant Riley of Tullerone, who applied for a remand to complete his inquiries, said the accused was last at service at Mr. Jeremiah Dewan's house, Ballyspillane, which she left on the 24th of November last. That was the 24th of November 1919. The accused was remanded on bail. Another issue that crops up again and again in Kilkenny is what historians like to call agrarian unrest. In simple terms, this is any conflict to do with land. Now, by 1920, the vast majority of Kilkenny farms had been purchased over the previous three decades from the landlords by the farmers who farmed them, or tenant farmers as they were called. Even if your family has been on a farm in Kilkenny for hundreds of years, it is most likely that they only owned that farm from about a century ago. There was one landlord with land in Bennett's Bridge who had held out on selling his estate to his tenant farmers, but this was eventually rectified in 1920. This article is from the Kilkenny People of July 1920. An agreement has been come to between Mr. John Davis of Thomastown and his tenants on the Bennett's Bridge estate. About 6 years ago, the tenants commenced an agitation to compel the landlord to sell to them, and they withheld payment of all rents. Writs were served on some of the tenants in 1917, and the writs put into the sheriff's hands, but no levy took place. A public meeting was held in Bishop's Lock and addressed by the alderman W.T. Cosgrave, MP/TD, Mr. Lawrence Ginnell, and other Sinn Féiners, and the proceedings were at the time given a good deal of notice in the press. After the appointment of the present PP, parish priest of Tullerone, the Reverend McNamara, some short time ago, he took the latter up and has brought it to the present happy termination. Now, the terms were that 12 and a half years rent would be paid as the full purchase price, along with 2 years previous rent, full of all the arrears, so all the arrears were included. And just to note there that the tenants probably didn't have this money, but their money was given as a mortgage, usually through the Land Commission. Now, another source of conflict in relation to agriculture was the often strained relationship between farmers and their labourers. Farm labouring as a profession, so to speak, has nearly vanished in Kilkenny now when compared to 100 years ago. But every farm, even of middling size, needed help back in 1920. It must be remembered also that labourers were at the very bottom end of the food chain, as it were. They wholly relied on their weekly pay with nothing to fall back on. Farmers in hard times could at least rely on their hens or cows in lean periods, so at least they wouldn't go hungry. Prior to mechanisation, everything had to be done by hand, so it was a very labour-intensive industry. And of course, tractors were only really in their infancy at this stage, and of course, very expensive. So it was not uncommon for larger farms to have a number of farm labourers living on site in an outhouse or some such. Now, by 1920, many of Kilkenny's labourers had joined the ITGWU, remember it from a school history with Big Jim Larkin, who founded it. And that trade union was very important to the farm labourers. They had won many rights during the First World War years as the demand for food for the war effort was so strong. But there was a slump by 1920, and as such, improvements to the work life of labourers in 1920 often fell on deaf ears. Thus, there was a number of local strikes, and farmers who were not seen to play ball were often targeted, usually by the destruction of their haystack, which of course was a very important feed animals during the fallow months of winter. Here is one such incident recorded in the Irish Times in January 1920. At Thomastown Courthouse, £600 of compensation was paid to a farmer named William Heffernan from Dunamagan for the malicious burning of about 60 tons of hay in October last. Malice was proved by Heffernan, who stated that in consequence of the refusal to work at neighbours' thrashings with non-union men, he dismissed three of his own workmen who were members of the ITGWU. There was considerable friction in the district between the labourers and the farmers. So to summarise what happened here, threshings were a big community event where farmers would help each other out during the threshing season. Heffernan had asked his farm labourers to help with a neighbour's threshing. They refused because the other people that were working there were not members of the union. Hence, Heffernan fired his three labourers, and hence why he believed they burnt his haystack. £600 was a huge amount of compensation, but it shows how important hay was. Like, he could buy a tractor for £250, £300. So £600 was a not inconsiderable sum. Staying on the trade union team, Nora Connolly, the daughter of 1916 leader James Connolly, visited Kilkenny in the summer of 1920 to deliver a speech in aid of the Kilkenny rail workers who were on strike at the time. Here's an extract from the local paper. At the invitation of the Kilkenny Workers' Council, Miss Nora Connolly, daughter of the Irish Patriot and Labour leader, the late Mr. James Connolly, visited Kilkenny on Saturday night and delivered an address at a concert in the theatre organised on behalf of the Railway Men's Fund. She was accorded a very enthusiastic reception by the different sections of Labour in the city, who formed a procession in her honour, headed by St. John's Brass Band. The intention of the organising committee to hold an airriacht and hurling contest in St. James's Park on behalf of the same worthy object was frustrated by the exceedingly inclement weather conditions which prevailed, but the concert on Sunday night was most successful. The programme was contributed to by local artists and leading Waterford talent, and it was thoroughly enjoyed by a large audience. Miss Connolly's address during the interval mainly dealt with the labour movement. Now, we can't talk about Kilkenny without mentioning hurling, but unfortunately it was not a good picture in 1920. There was no senior club championship played. The 1919 championship had not even been finished, and there were disputes galore over the previous few years with appeals and counter-appeals, the order of the day. So maybe the break was needed in 1920, as there was bad blood between some of the clubs and the county board. In fact, there wouldn't be a senior hurling championship completed in Kilkenny for the next 2 years. The Kilkenny senior county team did play, however, but were knocked out by Dublin in the Leinster final, played in Croke Park in July 1920. Indeed, it might have been for the best, as the 1920 All-Ireland final was not actually played until nearly 2 years later, in May 1922, during the truce, due, of course, to the turmoil the country was engulfed in, especially after the summer of 1920. So not finishing a competition within the calendar year is nothing new to the GAA, something we might be cognizant of in these COVID times. The following is a letter to a local newspaper by a person calling themselves Black and Amber. In it, they refer to the Junior Leinster final, which was played in May 1920, at which Kilkenny were again defeated by Dublin. Sir, I would indeed feel grateful if you would spare me a few lines in your valuable journal, pass a few remarks re our Kilkenny hurling team. I am a Kilkenny man resident in Dublin and was present at last Sunday's game in Croke Park. All honour to our juniors for their valiant display, but I think the addition of a few of the old guard would have brought victory last Sunday. Their experience and example would prevent such things as two of our own men running for the ball together and the crowding in of the backs on the goalkeeper and thus unsighting him. And again, our boys did not keep their places, especially the forwards. This was painfully obvious in the second half when we lost splendid opportunities of scoring. Now that the Leinster Senior Championships are about to start, I would respectfully suggest that a selection committee be established with some enthusiastic clergymen at its head and have a representative team picked from Munkine, Dixbour and Tullerone. Let us cast all petty bickerings aside, and I feel convinced, as do all Kilkenny men in Dublin at present, that the All-Ireland Hurling Championship must go to the north side this year. We have the material, so let's be up and doing. Hoping you will give this letter a space in your widely read journal, I remain sincerely yours, Black and Amber. Now, the disturbed nature of the country in 1920 allowed opportunistic criminals the chance to make hay while the sun shone. For example, in Goran, the local Church of Ireland rector's house was attacked. The two men eventually charged were described as ex-soldiers. This was an all too familiar occurrence, as former soldiers of the First World War arrived back home to Kilkenny with little chance of finding employment. The ex-soldier characterisation also hints at a class distinction. Many of these would be working class and joined the army for economic reasons. It's also interesting to note that in the summer of 1920, just prior to the Black and Tans and auxiliaries arriving in numbers, quite unusually, law and order was maintained by both the regular RIC and IRA volunteers. The following is an article that described what happened to Canon Hogg and Goran in July 1920. The residence of the Reverend Canon Albert V. Hogg, Rector Goran, was attacked about midnight on Saturday by a number of masked men. Two ex-soldiers have been arrested by the police in connection with the affair. A third man is also wanted but is said to be on the run. The volunteers, it is stated, that's the IRA volunteers, are endeavouring to round him up. Traces of blood were also found on the front doorstep and windowsills of Canon Hogg's residence, one of the raiders evidently having his hand badly cut during the window smashing. Canon Hogg, who has been rector of Goran Parish for the past 14 years, is most popular in the neighbourhood, and the people of all classes and creeds in the parish are filled with indignation at the outrage to which he has been subjected. Canon Hogg says himself then, "I was asleep soundly at 12 o'clock on Saturday night last, when I was awoken by a great noise of hammering and kicking at the hall door. I heard voices saying, 'Open this door, Mr. Hogg, immediately.' I then got up and stood on the windowsill and looked out and saw men at the door. I told them that I could not get out of the bed at that hour of the night to open the door for them. All this time, one of the men, whom I took to be the leader, had me covered with what looked to be a revolver. I said, 'I am unarmed and I would not shoot you even if I had arms. You are no Irishman to attack an unarmed man.' The leader then said, 'Put your head in or we will fire.' 1, 2, 3. I went away from the window, but he did not fire, and there was no firing at any time, in fairness to them. There was then a crashing of glass, and I expected every moment they would get into the house, but they did not succeed. The men at the hall door attacked the fanlight, which being of iron resisted the force. They then went around to the pleasure ground, but there was an area between them and the drawing room and parlour windows. They threw in large stones, breaking the glass. They afterwards decamped through the back fields and set fire to 3 cocks of hay, which had previously been sold to me by Mr. James Dowling of Goran. Canon Hogg states that he could recognise neither the voices nor the appearance of the men. He expressed the opinion that they were all under the influence of drink. I wish to make clear, he concluded, that I do not attach any sectarian or political meaning in the slightest degree to the attack. For the last 14 years during which I have lived amongst the people of Gorn, the warmest terms of friendship have existed between us. Many of the people of the district came to my house on Sunday evening and expressed their regret and indignation at what had happened. Canon Hogg has launched a claim for compensation. Canon Hogg immediately reported the matter to the Gorn police, who set out to investigate it. They were in charge of District Inspector White, Kilkenny, and they eventually placed under arrest two ex-soldiers named Stephen Drenlin, Clash William, and Andrew Hoban, Earls Bog. It is stated that the prisoners made a full confession of their guilt. Hoban, at the time of his arrest, was suffering from a fairly deep wound in the wrist, apparently caused by broken glass. It is also suggested the raiding party numbered only three, and the third, a middle-aged man, is on the run. Further inquiries elicited the fact that the raiders visited several farms in the neighbourhood on Saturday night. The house of Thomas Cullerton, Watree, was visited shortly after the raid on Canon Hogg's. The two bedroom windows were smashed, as well as the kitchen window underneath. Mr. Cullerton came down and opened the door. Money was demanded by the raiders, but they got none. Mr. Matthew Murphy Bodle was next visited, and the owner surrendered a shotgun. After an unfruitful visit to Thomas Delaney's Clash William, where they also demanded money, they proceeded to Michael Drennan's in the same locality. Mr. Drennan, in response to their demand for money, told them he had none. Mr. Drennan states the raiders were masked and that their coats turned inside out. They took his shotgun. The IRA volunteers, it is stated, are pursuing inquiries into the raid and the whereabouts of the third man. Just to finish up on more lighter notes, the Kilkenny Moderator newspaper reported on a Christmas card that was received by House of Commons Labour MP Commander Joseph Kenworthy in December 1920, sent from the auxiliaries in Inistig. Although he himself was from Leamington Spa in England, Kenworthy had been very critical in Parliament on the actions of the auxiliaries in Ireland. They were obviously not too enamoured by his comments, especially since it was one of their own criticising them. The card was one of the official auxiliary printed Christmas cards, with an image of an auxiliary officer on the front and tied by a green ribbon. The Kilkenny Moderator article picks up the story. On the inside page are the words, "With best wishes of the Auxiliary Division RIC for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year." The word "best" is underlined three times. After the words "Happy New Year," the following is written in red ink: "Hoping your Christmas dinner chokes you." At the bottom of the card is Ireland Xmas 1920. The postmark on the envelope containing the card is Thomastown, County Kilkenny. For the fun of the thing, Commander Kenworthy showed the Christmas card to Sir Hammer Greenwood, who was the Chief Secretary of Ireland, who laughed at this and said, "You don't intend to take any notice of this?" "Not at all," answered Commander Kenwood MP. "I get dozens of these threatening letters every day." Finally, just to finish with a few advertisements. Newspaper ads are always a very entertaining way to look and examine past, and in a way it underscores that as much as things change, they also stay the same. An ad in the Kilkenny Moderator advertises Lawrence's hair dye. "Let your hair be as bright and as glossy as an Irish girl should be. Keep the beauty and charm of your hair by the use of Lawrence's hair dye. Simple and pleasant in use, harmless and undetectable. All natural shades from blonde to raven black, and the prices start in 1 and 5 right up to 3 and 6 per bottle. If you want it posted out, it's an extra 4 pence extra per bottle, and there's 11 chemists listed that has it for sale in Carlow, Kilkenny." Just like the present day, people loved a day trip to the beach. An advertisement in the Kilkenny People gave information on a charabang excursion to Tramore. Now, these were kind of like open top buses that people could pay to go on day trips to the beach and elsewhere. This bus is leaving on Sunday, July 18th, 1920. It will leave Castlecomer at 8:30 a.m. and will leave the parade Kilkenny at 9 a.m. returning from Tramore at 7:30 p.m. sharp. The return fare from Castlecomer was 12 shillings and sixpence. The return fare from Kilkenny was 10 shillings. Tickets can be had from Mrs. Brophy, stationer, 13 High Street, or at the garage, John Street, Kilkenny. I just want to thank you once again for listening today. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Don't forget to join your local library and to avail of all the fabulous free resources. Until next time.